Hey, everybody, it's Mark. Thanks for joining me today for episode 2 of my new podcast series, Mark My Words, Charles Gassenheimer Lies. Let me just catch up a little bit for anybody who didn't hear or watch the first episode, but I do suggest you go back because I'm really just going to give a quick summary here. And so the podcast that you're about to see in just a few minutes was intended to be the first output from a business relationship that I had negotiated with Kelly Moore, with representatives of Charles Gassenheimer. I had never met him during that process, during that negotiation. I was one of several people in on a meeting when, it was sort of laid out what we were hoping to accomplish. And then all of my conversations with the company after that were with other people. And so the podcast that you're about to see was supposed to be the first output from all of that work. And of course, it never got published because of the story that that I'm about to tell you. But what happened was we get on this podcast. So we scheduled this podcast. We get on this call and you're going to see, I barely knew the guy. I was asking him how to spell his name, how to pronounce his name. In just the 25 minutes of this podcast, which you're going to see all of it in just those 25 minutes, he managed to make me wonder if whether or not this is the sort of guy that I wanted to be working for and whether or not I even wanted his money. And so I'm going to share all of that with you. But before I do, what I thought might be interesting, when this podcast episode ended, I had all of those questions. The first thing I did was reach out to some friends that I knew who were vendors of Kelly Moore. And I started to hear some really troubling stories about unethical behavior and that they were not paying their bills, et cetera. And so that was the very first thing that got me thinking, maybe I don't want to be dealing with somebody like Gassenheimer. You know, everybody who's been following along, and for the new people, I'll fill you in a little bit. Those of you who have been following along for a number of years know I'm mostly retired now. I live in Stamford, Connecticut. I sold my stores in the Bronx, New York, probably 4.5 years ago or something like that. And so, I just wasn't looking for trouble. If he had a bad reputation, I was already thinking, let me stay away from him. And then during that process of just that outbound outreach, looking for people to get me some information, some of those people started to give me the heads up that Charles Gassenheimer has a history. He has a history of being sued. He has a history of financial misdealings. And so for me, it was really a very easy decision. You know, like I said, late in my career, I wasn't looking to fill a full schedule of work anyway. It would have been nice to take his money. I mentioned in the other episode, it was quite a lot of money. It would have been nice to take his money, but more than anything else, I just didn't want the trouble. And so I wanted to share with you before we get into it, what exactly that research exposed. And then even as I do that, I'm going to be able to give you a little bit of update as I'm recording this today. It's March 1st. And so there's actually been some very recent news on Mr. Gassenheimer, which I think is significant. So let me tell you about two companies that Charles Gassenheimer worked as the chief executive officer on. One of them is a company called EnerOne. EnerOne was a lithium battery manufacturer. In 2009, EnerOne received a $118 million grant from the United States government. That was the Obama administration at that time, as part of an economic recovery package that had been put together as a result of the 2008-2009 financial crisis. Now, grants, of course, do not have to get paid back, but do you know who did get paid before the company went into bankruptcy not long thereafter? Charles Gassenheimer and his crew, who paid themselves bonuses, Gassenheimer's close to $500,000, just before closing EnerOne. In the process of researching that, the Securities and Exchange Commission found that there were other questions about what was going on at EnerOne. In fact, the SEC ultimately determining that EnerOne, Charles Gassenheimer's company, did not use generally accepted accounting practices and their books did not conform with what's called GAAP, generally accepted accounting practices. Once the SEC did start looking around, they were able to accuse Charles Gassenheimer of materially misstating the value of assets. That misstatement, according to the SEC, resulted in an overstatement of the company's earnings by almost $60 million. Further, the SEC stated that EnerOne had numerous deficiencies in their internal accounting and that the company lacked procedures to do proper oversight. The SEC going on further to say that Gassenheimer did not ensure that EnerOne had the right procedures and oversight in place to make sure that the books and records were properly maintained. As they're closing down Kelly Moore, I'm sitting here in Stamford wondering if the same thing's not happening down in Irving, Texas, as he's otherwise trying to orderly wind down Kelly Moore. But that's what he was doing at EnerOne, but that's from 2009. Let's update the story a little bit. The SEC ultimately determining that Charles Gassenheimer unlawfully obtained property through misstatements and omissions, because the SEC determined that he had intentionally made those omissions for the purposes of enticing additional investment into his company, which the SEC very politely called a misstatement. But hey, what's the name of this show? That was Charles Gassenheimer's lie. That was a lie that he told that materially made a misstatement for the purposes of enriching himself. And the SEC caught him doing that. Gassenheimer was also charged in this same action by the SEC with intentionally falsifying records. While Gassenheimer was responding to me that this was all somebody else's fault, he was telling the SEC something else. This little accounting glitch, as you like to think of it, Charles, cost you $100,000 when you had to say, yeah, that was me. I did that. You caught a little break because the SEC only gave you a little fine, $100,000. But nonetheless, that's your name on the document that says that you did that. Charles Gassenheimer is currently the chief executive officer of PharmaCore Health. That's a name that you guys might have some familiarity with because I know that that has made it in the news. We're going to update some of that story very soon. It's interesting, by the way, he's the chief executive officer, which is every chief executive officer I've ever known has been two full-time jobs. He's the chief executive officer of multiple companies at the same time, Kelly Moore and this PharmaCore. PharmaCore provides healthcare services to prison systems, and it doesn't seem like they do a particularly good job of that. Let's see if Charles is having any success winding down PharmaCore in an orderly manner or keeping the company out of court, as is his dream for Kelly Moore. But there are currently more than 500 lawsuits alleging medical negligence against PharmaCore. But Gassenheimer doesn't stop at just those 500 employees of Kelly Moore. Pay attention. This is going to sound familiar. There are close to 50 employee wage lawsuits pending against PharmaCore. Something else that's going to sound familiar, particularly to the former vendors of Kelly Moore, PharmaCore owes over $100 million, or there are claims against PharmaCore of over $100 million from former vendors of the company. And for anybody wondering where I'm getting this information from, you are free to do Googling. This is all coming from court filings, which are public records. One of the more than 600 lawsuits that Gassenheimer is involved with because of PharmaCore is with the former chief executive officer of the company. He claims in his lawsuit that Gassenheimer is using what he is calling, quote, the Texas two-step of a legal process, allowing Gassenheimer to extract all the value from that company, leaving nothing but the garbage left for the courts. Starting to sound familiar? And so the way they did that was by breaking up PharmaCore into two divisions and taking all of these lawsuits, all of this garbage, these 600 lawsuits, and putting them into a company called Corizon Health. Now he's starting to sound familiar to more people, because up until this part of the story, you've been getting it from me and what I share. Maybe you've got friends sending you some clippings and stuff. But now this is on the front page of the news. So you don't have to look very hard anymore to see where the next couple of years are going. Charles Gassenheimer is going to be spending his time. Let me update this story a little bit. On January 31st of this year, Senator Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts reached out to the United States Department of Justice regarding Corizon Health. In short, she explains that she's reaching out regarding the Chapter 11 proceedings that are going on relating to Corizon, all these lawsuits that I've just been telling you about. And in her own words, she uses the word Texas two-step maneuver. And she says they use this maneuver explicitly to evade its liabilities owed to its many creditors. On January 16th, Corizon announced an agreement on a new bankruptcy plan that, if confirmed, will deny Corizon's creditors, including incarcerated individuals, victims, adequate restitution for the company's serious harms. These are direct words from the United States Senator shared with the Department of Justice about the way Charles Gassenheimer behaves in business. She went on from there. I'm not going to read the whole thing. She went on basically to say what a lot of us have discovered about Charles Gassenheimer. And she went on to share that with the Department of Justice and asked that the Department of Justice step in and not allow this bankruptcy to go through, not allow the protection of the bankruptcy courts to apply to Corizon Health. I'm not a lawyer. I should be clear about that. And so what happens when a senator writes to the Department of Justice and asks for a particular action? Well, let's find out. Updating this story dated February 25th. Today, as I record this, this is only March 1st, so less than a week old. The Justice Department calls for the dismissal of the Corizon bankruptcy. So what they've said is Corizon should not, because of the attention that Senator Warren brought to this issue, and I'm sure the 600 lawsuits that are pending against this company and against this chief executive officer, the Justice Department has come in and said that Corizon needs to be dismissed from bankruptcy. In other words, they're not eligible because there's a whole lot of other stuff going on. Bankruptcy is protection. And we're going to find out in the future why the Department of Justice doesn't feel like Charles Gassenheimer needed protection of bankruptcy court as he would be entitled to if he had had legitimate financial downturns. These things happen. I know people who have been bankrupt. I came close in my career to almost going bankrupt once. And so the bankruptcy laws are there to protect people. Why does the Department of Justice think that Charles Gassenheimer is not worthy of that protection? And we're going to find out, but nothing wrong with giving you my opinion of what I think it is. And that is that there's criminal activity going on at Corizon. And the reason I feel that way, there's a few. First off, I find it to be highly unusual that a company would be pulled from bankruptcy. That process alone, to have a senator from the United States, one of the 100 most ranking leaders in our government, pulled this guy Gassenheimer out of line and said, this is not like the other 100 million bankruptcies that are going on in the United States right now. I don't have the numbers. And asked, which is what senators do, asked the Department of Justice to step in. It's my opinion that they would probably not have done that absent some criminal suspicion, because it's my opinion that there are other departments in the United States government that would be more suited to that. And particularly since these are interstate transactions and some of these companies are probably public, maybe the SEC. So the idea that the Department of Justice has said that Corizon should be removed from the bankruptcy process, I think, is very telling on where this situation is going. We're going to find out in the coming you know, this is probably going to take the better part of 2 years to unfold, but we're going to find out in that time what other lies the Department of Justice thinks that Charles Gassenheimer told. Something else I find interesting about this whole thing, of course, all of this is public when the United States Justice Department speaks with papers that they file with the court. And so in this particular case, the Department of Justice has filed a paper with the court saying that Charles Gassenheimer should not be allowed to go through the bankruptcy process in that court. And so I suspect that significant changes are coming Gassenheimer's way. In fact, it strikes me as impressive with all of this, all of these lawsuits that he has to manage, that he even had time to do all of this at Kelly Moore. Needless to say, a little research on Charles Gassenheimer made it a very easy decision for me not to have any dealings with him and to bring an end to our relationship. So now I'm ready to go. That's I have a lot more detail that I plan to share with you in the coming weeks. I do plan to do 4 more episodes in this series. And so I have a lot more that I plan on filling in. And I'm talking now to a couple of Kelly Moore employees about possibly coming on, which, of course, would be a really exciting episode to get a listen to. So if there's anybody listening now who thinks they've got a great story that they want to tell, I'm looking to give you the microphone to do that. Let me tell you what I'm going to do here. I'm going to share the podcast with you on this podcast. We've embedded it inside this podcast. I'm going to share the original podcast, only pausing it from time to time, just to share with you either what I'm thinking as I'm reflecting on it now, watching this a year or so later. As I was engaging in the episode, during that day, I was already thinking, I got to get out of here. So Charles Gassenheimer wanted to meet independent paint retailers. He wanted to meet the paint industry. He had asked me to help him do that by creating this podcast that you're about to see. And the irony that it's going to be used in the exact way that it was originally intended, but that the context has changed so dramatically, you know, I've been fascinated by that. I've had some thoughts about writing about it and just never managed to get my fingers to say it. But I have to say that to me is a fascinating part of this story, that this recording that we're about to watch was intended to introduce Charles to the paint industry for the first time after he had acquired one of the largest companies in the space. And it is going to be used as exactly that, only not exactly the way he had intended. So let me share my screen, but I'll stop along the way. And I want to share with you some of my thinking and some of what I remember of my thinking from back when I was hearing this for the very first time.
It's going up that you guys aren't comfortable with, but now we are recording now. And so what I'm going to do is just introduce you. You are the new CEO of Kelly Moore Paint. You guys are I usually say where you're headquartered. What do you want me to use there?
Well, as I'm sitting here to you.
So the reason I asked that question is the company had been headquartered in California for the entirety of its roughly 80 or so years in business. And when Gassenheimer bought the company, they almost immediately moved it to Texas.
You today in our new headquarters in Las Colinas, Texas.
New HQ in Las Colinas?
Yeah, you can just say Irving, Texas. Irving,
oh,
Texas.
Irving. Yeah. I've been to Irving.
Right,
nice.
Right by DFW Airport.
Yep. Actually went not that many years ago. My girlfriend and I went down in like maybe late September, early October to Dallas. We caught a Rangers game, a Cowboys game, and then did all the museums and saw where Kennedy was killed and everything in the middle. So that's a cool area. And so you're at the new corporate headquarters in Irving, Texas, and your last name is pronounced Gassenheimer, right?
Correct.
There you go. All right. I'm ready when you are.
Let's roll.
And so, by the way, I do the intro to this after we record. And so we're just going to jump right into it here.
Okay, no problem.
At the end of the six episodes of this series, I'm going to put up this entire podcast that you're seeing now. I'll put it up uninterrupted, and anybody who wants to listen can. And I will put it up with the introduction, which I haven't listened to. I just discovered it today as I'm recording this. I haven't listened to again, but I'm confident in what it said. And its intent was to start introducing this guy to the paint industry, and to do that for the purposes of aiding him in his efforts to to take up presence in the paint industry, and particularly in the independent channel.
Hey everybody, thanks for joining me today. It's Mark. With me today on my podcast is the new CEO of Kelly Moore, headquartered in Irving, Texas, Charles Gassenheimer. Charles, thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, so good to be with you, Mark. Thanks for the time.
Yeah, thank you for making the time. And so there's a lot of people interested in what Kelly Moore is doing in the independent channel. Before we get to that, tell us a little bit about your history and how you ended up here.
Yeah, thanks. So, look, I've had experience as a corporate CEO. I think this is my 10th time as being CEO of a company.
I believe that to be accurate, and to my knowledge, that means that somewhere in the 60% of his companies don't declare bankruptcy. I'm not sure what the outcomes of those are. I'm sure that they're financial successes. That's what he's doing this for, is money. And the other 40% of them seem to go bankrupt.
We're eager and excited to be here at Kelly Moore. We see a lot of opportunity. So when I was part of the team that...
I just want to stop there for one second and talk about the opportunity, because at that point, I just want to put a little context. This was October 2022. The paint industry had been just coming out of a tremendously challenging time where there were shortages on most materials. And in fact, dealers felt that for about, I think the industry as a whole sort of suffered for the better part of 2 years. I think dealers felt that not nearly as long, because I think Benjamin Moore's response to that was outstanding. But despite that response, there were still needs within the channel for more paint. And dealers that I was in touch with, which is often, you guys know, dealers was in touch with at the time were frequently telling me, I need something else. Because even though Benjamin Moore had done a great job making sure everything was back in stock, their volume had grown, dealers' volume had grown so significantly that it was outstripping, in some cases, Benjamin Moore's ability to fulfill orders for this new volume, right? At that time, Benjamin Moore, like all the other paint manufacturers, were only able to get the raws they were able to get. They were likely on some sort of rationing system, and that rationing system would have been based on last year's purchases. And so if all of a sudden your customers are demanding that they need another 20% paint, they're not going to get that extra 20%. And so there was an opportunity, and I was speaking to multiple executives who were interested in that opportunity. Paint independent dealers, the independent channel had grown between growth in sales, inflation, and growth of market share. The independent channel had added, $500 million, $1 billion worth of purchases, of liquid paint, architectural coatings. And so this guy was not the only one. looking at that opportunity, which is why he struck me as so serious at the time. Again, as I'm sitting there, I'm thinking, this guy's paying my bills for the next 2 years.